Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Rob.
I'm Brad.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I am warm.
We're all warm.
Yes, it is 30. I can't quite see the full thermometer's range, but it does look to be in the mid-30s in this flat right now.
A bit like us.
Yeah, it's I mean, the flat's not handling it as well as we do, but
no.
Nothing. Who possibly could?
Yeah.
How are things? All right?
Yeah, things are good, I think. Yeah. Nice. Star Warsy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A few bits going on. You know, we'll come to them later. There's some newsy bits.
Yeah, well, we did a big game of Legion on Monday. E14 contributors Blake and Dave. I seem to really enjoy it. So
everybody loves a bit of Blake.
Everyone loves a bit of Dave as well.
Yeah, honest. That's true. Actually, he's increasingly popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here we are. Good for them.
Chatting online. Yeah, like good for a couple of losers.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Just through gritted teeth like a pair of common horse thieves.
Must be nice to be loved.
You know what's going to happen now is we're going to get a couple of messages back behind the scenes going, like, we do love you. And that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
And another message going, when's Dave coming on Talk Star Wars?
Well, by then he may have made his Emotionally 14 podcasting debut, so you never know.
Oh, yeah. Exciting times.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
Right, so we have a new review. It's a little bit,
okay, cool.
A little bit of an odd one, but I know who sent this one, and it doesn't surprise me. They've gone for a slightly surreal take.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, so I'll have a...
Okay.
Did you want to read it, or do you want me to read it?
I'll let you do the honors on this one.
All right. Okay, so the review is 5 stars and reads, Winston Churchill is an interesting man. First of all...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't dispute that.
In every sense of the word, really.
Yeah, there's nothing I can disagree with so far.
No.
First of all, can I just say that I dislike Apple's podcast app? Good, because I've gone and said it. I can't disagree with that. It's by no means...
It's the only one I use. I have no issue with it.
Fair. It's not the worst I've used, but it is by far nowhere near the best. It's a little, has its issues. iTunes on a PC is way worse, I'll say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. Second of all, I love this show. I enjoy listening to these guys talk about Star Wars.
Me too.
Yeah, again, can't disagree.
No.
Thirdly, if I could only pick one dish that best represents the UK, what would you suggest besides fish and chips? Here on my moisture farm, we subside only on blue milk, lettuce stew, and lots of mushrooms that grow on the moisture evaporators. Live long and prosper, Mogan Lars. So this is Mogan Lars of, he's one of the, he's a kind of a cross podcast fans. He's a fan of Talk Star Wars, Tumbling Saber, Rogue Squadron. So I converse with him mainly on the Rogue Squadron chat. So
okay,
I know him from there. What would you suggest best represents the UK?
Oh, Sunday roast, surely.
Sunday roast is a good choice, I think, yeah. But what roast? That's the important question.
I'm a vegetarian, so my options are quite limited.
There would have been a point where you were having meat roast.
Yeah, I suppose so. When I eat meat, I actually quite like beef.
Okay, beef's a good. Yeah. Beef's an underrated roast. It's not one you see as often.
My local, if I go to their Sunday roast, they do quite a nice mushroom pie for the vegetarian option, which is lovely.
That sounds nice. I was thinking pie and mash might be a good English...
Okay, we can meet there.
Yeah, kind of a good English, you know, a staple. Jelly deals is very coastal, very specific.
Yeah, it's quite associated with East London as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a one that's quite geographically...
Restricted, something thing.
I think. Restricted is the wrong word, but it's not something you're going to likely see north of. No, I never have. No,
me neither.
No, I can't say it's ever interested me. To be honest, I'm not a massive seafood fan. You know, there's a few bits I like, but generally fish of most kinds. But other seafoods, it's very hit and miss with me. So I tend to
just squid. Yeah,
squid. I like squid. Yeah, I do like squid. Crab. I like that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there? I'm not a fan of mussels, winkles, cockles, all that stuff.
Oysters, nothing like that.
No. Just, there's something about the texture of it. It's all gritty and horrible, and I just can't be dealing with it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, pie and mash,
maybe. Yeah, that's not a bad answer.
Yeah, so I don't know what they would call it in the States. just mashed potato, obviously, is quite universal. But
yeah, I don't know. Do they have savory pies in America? They make deal of.
Yeah, they obviously apple pies, and you know, there's lots of sweet pies, but savory pies.
The Americans in movies and TV shows, they seem to go nuts for pie, and we're just kind of sitting there going, "Yeah, pie's fine."
Yeah, I like pie. It's all right. Yeah, I like a bit of pie, but again, it's
not a Twix. Don't go nuts.
Which would be what would that be? There is an equivalent to Twix in the States, isn't there?
I don't know.
It's something that's been straight rebranded. It's just the same.
Yeah, I've tried a couple of American, because we get like there's an American food section in most supermarkets these days.
Yes.
And one day my local just gave up and moved it to the confectionery aisle.
Yeah.
I'm a vegetarian, but I do eat Twinkies. That's my one concession. I've had it Babe Ruth. They're kind of like
a
Snickers. They're like a Snickers, all the joy sucks out of it.
Yeah, they're okay. I prefer a Snickers, but you know, what else is there? Like, I don't know the batch.
Charleston Chew's quite nice, actually.
Charleston Chew's all right, yeah. I always liked Mike and Ike's. I quite like those.
They're quite nice. They're very nice, actually, yeah.
They're something, because obviously Jen's away at the moment in the States, and one thing she said to me before she left is, do you want me to bring you anything back? And on the one hand, I said, well, no, because I want to eat, you know, I'm trying to eat better. She's been eating better, and I've been trying to kind of go along with her as much as I can, as much as is practical to do. But at the same time, I was thinking, but Mike and Ike's.
Yeah.
Eventually, I settled on, don't get me anything. I can get Mike and Ike's really easily because they sell them in pound shops over here now.
Is there anything I can get you that's hard to get over there? AR-15?
How long are you over there? I know there's like a waiting period and stuff. So are you going to be? Are you still going to be over there when it's up? Probably not. Oh well. Best of luck with customs.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the review, Mogan. A 5-star review is always lovely, and one that gives us some weird conversation points is also appreciated.
Absolutely.
So our next piece of communication comes from Vesuvi, the ever present, and
I'll be disappointed if it wasn't.
Indeed, the ever present and ever loved Vesuvi. Did you want to read this one?
We'll take it in turns.
Sure.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Brad. I thought the great name for the Ewok with pituitary gigantism you two riffed about. It should be called Edorbor. That's Rob Wade spelled backwards.
That's true, it is.
That really oddly sounds like an Ewok name, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, who'd have thought?
My name I have a really weird name like that, because it's Treebor backwards as well, if you spell it out fully, which obviously over in the UK, I don't know if it's the same in the States, is a confectionery brand, which makes mints, which I'm very fond of.
Yes. In episode 127, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the recent and courageous, in my opinion, confession by Ahmed Best that he fell into a deep depression and considered suicide after the negative response to the character of Jar Jar Binks, magnified by online bullying, following the release of episode 1. Do you want to stop there, discuss that, and carry on, or do you want me to read the whole thing?
I mean, there's not...
it seems really to be a jump, so we should probably discuss this, I guess.
I don't really have a lot to add to it beyond the thing we kind of touched on a few episodes ago, which was that abuse and bullying and harassment were bad.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I feel genuinely bad he felt so bad.
100%.
Because I thought Ahmed Best was great.
He did his job very effectively.
Well, yeah, I've got him sign my, because I've got a few autographs on my Star Wars DVDs, and I met him at a convention and got him to sign Phantom Menace. And
after a brief headbutt.
And one of my friends said, why did you want his autograph? And the answer was, because he was brilliant.
He was in Star Wars. Reason.
But Jar Jar Binks was supposed to be annoying.
He was supposed to be
one of the most genuinely infuriating people you've ever met.
Yeah.
And he played the part brilliantly.
Totally, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's genuinely sad that he did such a good job and ended up being criticised for it. I mean, I'm a fan of the prequels. I'm not a prequel basher by any stretch of the imagination.
No, not at all.
Being objective, I can understand some of the objections to prequels.
Sure.
I can understand some of the objections certain people have with them, and that's fine. That's how art works.
Yeah.
And I do feel that some of the He seemed to take a lot of a flack for what could be considered to be other problems with the film.
Sure.
He very much, Jar Jar Binks is very much a scapegoat for the prequel trilogy.
When you say,
he's only in one movie.
Sorry, yeah, to clarify, when you say he took the flack, you mean Jar Jar Binks as a character?
As a character,
Ahmed
Best
by extension.
By extension, yeah. Yeah, Jar Jar Binks is very much a scapegoat for other problems with the prequel trilogy, other problems that people have with the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... obviously, it's great he can talk about it now.
Yeah.
Because we have all these online mental health awareness weeks and
absolutely.
Hashtags and days, which are super important because it is a thing which is a major issue that isn't discussed openly enough.
Absolutely, yeah.
And absolutely. I think it's wonderful he felt safe enough to talk about it now.
Yeah.
So I feel awful he felt that way, but yeah. I am full of admiration for him for talking about it now.
Yeah, I totally agree.
At an appropriate time as well, when it sometimes feels like Star Wars fandom has descended into civil war.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, let's we can move on from that, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally agree. I can't, you know, you've expressed it.
Yeah,
perfectly for me.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, take words out of my mouth. It's good.
Yeah.
Saves me a lot. Saves me like 50% of the work. It's great.
I'll put the pliers down now. Let's just see what else for CV has to say.
Yes, let's
do
that.
I'd also like to hear your thoughts on the news of Kerry Russell being in early talks to appear in episode 9. She, like Greg Grunberg, Snap Wexley, has worked with J.J. Abrams numerous times over the years. The headless chicken web hearsay mill has already speculated that she might be anything from Rey's mother to Mara Jade. Supposing she's not going to be one of those flashier parts, would you rather see her in a minor resistance or a First Order role? I don't know that I've seen her in anything else.
I can't be sure.
No, yeah. I'll use Hitchhiker's Guide here and have a quick look. But I had to look her up when the news broke.
Yeah, same.
It wasn't a name like
immediately familiar.
Donnie Yen or Felicity Jones, which is immediately familiar to me, I'm afraid. She was in Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, so fame beckons.
Oh, of course, yeah. Silly me. You know.
We Were Soldiers, she was in. I'm afraid I haven't seen that.
I can't say I have either. I recognise her face, though.
A Dawn of a Planet of the Apes.
Okay, I don't think I've seen that. I recognise her face. That's the interesting thing. I wonder if she's been in... She's played smaller parts in stuff I've seen quite a lot.
Possibly.
She looks really familiar.
Quite a bit of TV work, by the look of it. But I'm afraid she's not someone whose work I'm familiar with.
No, I can't say I'm not particularly familiar with her either. Like I say, there's something about her face that is very, very familiar, and it makes me wonder if I've seen stuff with her in and just not put it together that it's her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's in the episode of Boy Meets World. That's probably it.
Okay.
Remember that show, kids?
The second point, which is a Rey's mother. I mean, possibly. Like I said in the last episode, I'm still interested in some kind of reconciliation for Rey's involvement in the overarching storyline.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, reason she's involved in the storyline is right place, right time. And that doesn't quite gel for me for a central character who's an incredibly powerful force user. But I did all that last episode anyway.
Yeah, we did. We don't necessarily see eye to eye on that, and that's fine.
No, that's fine. No, yeah. It's not all degree Star Wars.
Well, exactly,
There's, as Mara Jade, I kind of feel Mara Jade's not coming back, guys.
I think it would be increasingly hard to reconcile that one. Because all the parts that she would, all the parts that Mara Jade would have played in galactic history have been kind of retconned out.
Yeah, it's going to be super hard to do. I think you're going to have to let Mara Jade go. We got Thrawn, all right?
Exactly, yeah.
We got Thrawn.
And there's no reason why we can't have Mara Jade in that kind of
I mean, have you read the Last Jedi novelization?
I have not.
No, I haven't read it myself yet, but I seem to remember someone saying there's a passing reference to Luke's wife in it.
Oh, it's I believe that's a dream sequence. I don't think that's got any basis in reality.
Yeah, I don't generally do novelizations, so
some of them are good. Yeah, the Rogue One was good. The Revenge of the Sith one is excellent.
Oh, really?
Definitely.
Oh,
if you want worth checking out, that's definitely it. It goes into real, you know, that kind of the whole build up to the throne, to, not the throne room. Yeah, it's the throne room scene on board the name of the ship escapes me at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, Battle of Coruscant.
Yeah, the Battle of Coruscant.
Trade Federation.
They're on board the ship, and obviously they come in and they see Palpatine sort of restrained in the chair, and then they fight Dooku. There's a little bit of exposition before that between Sidious and Dooku. Okay. And obviously, with the benefit of hindsight and having seen the first three movies, you know obviously that Sidious and Palpatine are one and the same, but... Mm-hmm. In the way it's done in the novelization is kind of still treating them as distinct characters, and it can be literally and obviously it ties in quite well because Dooku is just turns up at the top of the stairs when they're when they found the Chancellor. He just turns up at the top of the stairs, and of course he does because they've just been in the room having a conversation about this whole Clone Wars. And then there's a really nice way they handle sort of Dooku's last few moments. Is really, really, without going into details, obviously, I don't want to sort of cheapen the reaction.
Is it the Chino, that one? Or was it Stover? Is it Stover or the Chino did that?
That is, I think it might be Stover. I'm not sure. Yeah. Lucino is obviously the Dark Lord book.
He did a lot of the darks. Yeah. Joseph Chino always did the dark stuff, and he was very, very good at it.
Yes, very much so.
Has he done much of the new canon stuff, actually?
Tarkin is his only one.
Tarkin was a good one, and definitely felt like a Chino novel, but also kind of felt like it might have been written to be a Legends novel and happens to become a...
Kind of written on the cusp of...
Yeah, it was very close.
Oh,
yes.
James Luceno also wrote Catalyst, the Rogue One tie-in novel, the prequel to Rogue One, that sort of fleshed out the backstory. That, yeah. that was a good book.
That was good, but I read it before I saw Rogue One, and I kind of need to revisit it now I know the film, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. James Luceno's done three books, I think, at least. I'm basing it on the Audible catalogue, which in the UK is rubbish in comparison. It's only two books in my library, and one of them is no longer canon because it's the Dark Lord, the one I just finished. That was good.
It's a long time since I've read that, but I have fond memories of it.
It was good. I enjoyed it, you know, and because I listened at 1.5 speed, it was over quite fast. So because it's the only way to get through audiobooks.
Does that not affect the pitch?
Quite a bit. But, you know, because it affects it all at the same level, it's kind of still fine. But it's a little bit weird, but it takes some getting used to. But,
Now, his only canon novels are Tarkin and Catalyst.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that Darth Plagueis is no longer canon as well. I could easily see creep back in.
Quite possibly. I was just reading something about some canon that's like a something sort of accessory book that put a few old Legends characters and concepts back into canon. I didn't have a chance to check it out, so maybe it'll go into next week's show notes.
It's
called Rebel Files.
So yeah, we don't think Kerry Russell's going to be playing Mara Jade.
No.
I just feel like I feel like that ship has sailed. Sorry, guys.
Totally.
I enjoyed the Legends universe, and I enjoyed Mara Jade very much, but onwards and upwards, I'm afraid. And the books still exist. You can go back and read them, but I don't think...
None of mine caught fire.
No, I don't think... I can't, at the moment, see a way they could bring her back in that would be satisfying.
No. And the only way they might be able to do it, like I say, is to go for the sort of Emperor's Hand era stuff. Have her be a mystery after Jedi, and then they could pop her in anywhere in kind of timeline, and that would work.
Yeah.
I don't think...
Episode 9 is not the place for it.
No, and you're not going to get her in the Mara Jade, Luke's wife kind of role that she played in the Legends, because that would require a load of exposition that they haven't done.
Mm.
You know, they've made it pretty clear that Luke has isolated himself on Octo, which presumably means he didn't have anything, you know, he didn't have any ties elsewhere.
No, he's got an X-Wing.
Well, yeah, apart from... Yeah, exactly. So, you know, no ties for him at all. So.
Star Wars puns.
Ship jokes.
Yeah.
I said ship with a P. Relax. Anyway, yeah, Vasugi...
Would you like to see him in Resistance or First Order role? Not knowing her, I really don't mind.
I think she'll play Resistance. I think I feel like the ranks of the Resistance are going to need fleshing out more than the First Order. The First Order will probably have a lot of... You know, with respect to the people who played those parts in the films, smaller, lesser known actors. They're not going to be kind of people with a high volume of high profile work, because Kerry Russell's been in things like Mission Impossible and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so she's got a body of high profile work behind her, whereas I don't think that's going to be your first order characters. Because I think actually this is the film where
Adrian Edmondson's going to be very upset with that.
I think also he might well be well to do so. But at the same time, I think if he were to consider himself somebody with a high profile body of cinematic work behind him, he's
got bad news. But,
yeah, exactly. Guesthouse Paradiso didn't go down as well as he'd hoped. So I think of the two, Resistance would be where I would see her.
Yes, okay.
No. But at the same time, it might be neither. It might be something completely different. You know, it might be
Scamavilly.
It might be Scamavilly.
It might be Boba Fett.
It might be a character who one of the two factions is trying to court for, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
if Billy Dee can't do it.
Well, you know, this is it. There may be ways to kind of work her into the story which don't require her being either. It's possible. Yes. It's unlikely at this point. I think you're probably going to be most likely seeing two forces kind of facing off, and you're not going to see a lot of side stuff. But it could happen.
If we were going to see that, we'd have seen it already. Yeah,
exactly.
And if it's not really in with the kind of dichotomy of Star Wars in general, is it? It's very light versus dark, good versus evil. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's one of the things I like about Star Wars.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing, isn't it?
Cheers for Suvi. Try and start a rumour that Rathtar's saliva works excellently as hair gel. P.S. Nice use of the word sommelier, Rob.
I did use the word sommelier last week, and clearly that didn't fall on deaf ears, which is nice to hear.
Apparently, yeah.
I don't know what it means. I'm kidding. No, I think it's something. It's a wine person.
Oh, okay, so I don't know.
yeah, that explains it.
Yeah. I've got a message from Dave. Is it back, Dave?
Sorry?
Is it the same Dave? Oh, it's not.
Australian Dave.
No, it's not E14 Dave.
Okay. I can read this one if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So Dave writes, "G'day, gents. With winter's
the accent.
No, people get upset. we've had letters before.
You can't do the Austrian accent.
No. It always ends up coming out like Arnie. I can't understand it. With winter school holidays here in Australia, it's been a good opportunity to spend rainy days with the kids watching Star Wars movies. That is an excellent use of a rainy day. Whilst watching, I enjoyed discussing with the kids the sliding doors moments in Star Wars, moments that occur that could have changed everything had it been dealt with differently. The obvious one for me is in A New Hope, when the two Star Destroyer commanders decide not to destroy the escape pod holding R2 and C-3PO. Hold your fire, there are no signs of life forms, it must have short-circuited. If only those commanders had destroyed that escape pod, how the story would have changed. And if only, so there's an autocorrect fail coming up here. Wonder if you can spot it. And if only Mace Windu allowed Anakin to join him after Anakin had revealed Palestine as the Sith Lord. That should read Palpatine. Palpatine. Thank you for that mobile phone that no doubt assisted in writing that message. But something tells me that's not what was intended.
Nice try.
Revealed Palpatine as the Sith Lord instead of ordering him to return to his chambers and wait. Could destiny have changed? Do you have any other sliding doors, if only moments, you can recall from any of the films? Love your show, as always. May the Force be with you.
A fun one.
Dave, Perth, Australia. I do have one.
Okay.
And I did actually, at one point, I wrote it down and fleshed it out, kind of. It was a semi-comedic take on how the story could be different. Qui-Gon manipulates the chance cube to free Shmi instead of Anakin, with the mind coming back for Anakin later.
Okay.
Because then he doesn't start down the dark path. Or at least not through mother related.
He does get marooned on a desert planet, which might.
He might, yeah. But at the same time, I can't imagine he's had a great time of it up until then. It's probably a bit of a busman's holiday up until that point. If anything, they might come along and he's just having, you know, sexy parties in his smoking jacket and, you know, just.
Episode 2 would have been weird.
Yeah. That would have been very odd. Yeah. I did think about that at one point. It would be, you know, like I said, it changes quite a few things. It obviously removes the Tatooine plot in episode two, because if Anakin is on Coruscant with Shmi, if she's safe at the very least, if she's not being subjected to ruin by Tusken Raiders, and you can interpret that however you please. Then he doesn't kind of start along that path from that point of view. Now that can happen elsewhere, but it can't really happen there.
Yeah, okay.
And further to that, if other things kind of play out as they would, and, you know, he kind of begins this illicit kind of love affair with Padme behind the scenes and they become pregnant, she's got somebody, you know, she's not just kind of isolated in her own sense in episode three.
Yeah.
Obviously, episode three is very different by contrast as well, because Palpatine's just tied to a chair at the beginning of the movie, and Anakin and Obi-Wan show up and go, "You all right, mate?" Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And he's just like, everybody's cheerful. Probably loses to Dooku again because he's not tapping into the dark side. Yeah. What about you? Have you anything
I obviously the Star Destroyer not shooting the escape pod is...
That's a huge one.
It's a huge one. And that got answered in from a certain point of view, didn't it?
I
think one of the first short stories kind of gives that... an unsatisfying explanation, but at least an attempt at an explanation.
Thankfully, they're all soft canon. They're not considered proper. The stories in that are not hard canon. They're kind of...
They're just in a Wikipedia timeline.
They are, but I think some of them are... there seems to be some conjecture about the durability of the canon in regards to some of those stories.
Okay.
So it may be that one is one of the ones that's kind of considered proper canon, but there are some, I believe.
I was under the impression we all were, but okay. So the Death Star laser one is not Death Star laser, the Star Destroyer laser is the most obvious one.
Yeah.
It's hard to think of any.
What about Dantooine? If he just decides
That's far too remote for an effective demonstration.
Well, what if it's not?
Okay.
What if he decides, having said that, we'll do it anyway? I've got, it's nearly the end of the financial year. I've got loads of fuel receipts to bump up, inflate. Yeah. And we can do with the trip.
Saving on lasers earlier.
Yes, you know, I managed to fix some holes in the budget, but there is one big one, which is that we've got a load of fuel allowance that we haven't claimed. And if we don't claim it now, we won't get it again next calendar year.
Yeah.
So
What if Han had got to Cloud City before the Empire did?
That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
What would have changed?
It does raise the question. So that's something I've never actually kind of put together until then. How does Boba Fett get ahead of the Falcon? Is it just that his hyperdrive works and theirs doesn't?
He's got a follower. He follows them, doesn't he?
Yeah. But then what has he done?
I was under the impression he followed them.
Yeah.
And radioed to the Empire, who do have working hyperdrives.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
it would bring the Star Destroyer or the Imperial Force to Bespin.
Yep.
And you have the cloud cars keeping them busy and keeping them occupied while the Empire's negotiating with Lando, was my impression.
Okay, fair enough.
Because they're definitely being held up by the cloud cars, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, it's true. It's always struck me as a bit, you know, I'm surprised when they open the throne room and Boba Fett strolls in, he doesn't go, "I've run from, I was on the other side of the, I'm parked."
Have you seen IG-88?
He's all right. He can just run. Yeah. I'm a bloke.
I'm an old bloke.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's...
He's about 25. But
it's always struck me as a bit weird that... he gets there, you know, with enough time to prep.
Yeah.
And yet, despite the fact that they've not been that long there themselves. I know he's about 35,
that's Brad Maff's, not Star Wars.
Yeah, it's fine. What else?
It's got to be, for a Sliding Doors moment, you can't go...
It has to be a binary choice, doesn't it?
Well, not only that, but it's also got to be something almost completely incidental, hasn't it? You can't do something like, what if Luke had given into the dark side on the second Death Star? Because that's an active character decision.
Yeah.
And you can't just do something like, what if Luke had died from exposure out in Hoth? Because that's not insignificant enough, really, is it? It's got to be almost like a glancing moment, a split. Bifurcation of time.
What about Poe gets off?
I know he does.
Gets off Jakku in the beginning of Force Awakens.
Okay. Yeah.
So he doesn't get captured by the First Order. He doesn't get interrogated. He doesn't. So the First Order don't know they're looking for a droid.
Yeah.
So Poe gets off the planet,
Yeah.
But then obviously when they go back, the resistance go back, the droids are not there because they've already gone off with Finn and Rey.
Yeah, okay.
You wouldn't have brought
Rey into the equation at all.
Well, you wouldn't have brought Finn, certainly.
No, nothing. No, he'd have just been having a moral quandary up on a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
And Rey would be sleeping in an attack.
I guess so.
Yeah, Poe would just gone back. Yeah, there would be no need to ever go back to Jakku again.
No. Well, didn't she run into the droid before? She ran into it before she met Finn. Because she saved it from a junker.
If Poe had managed to get off the planet,
it doesn't take BB-8.
I assumed he meant BB-8 escaped as well.
No, BB-8 goes off, doesn't he?
In that case, yeah, you would get Rey, but I don't know how you get Finn involved.
I don't think you do. I think you're right. No. I think he just sits there on the Star Destroyer going, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. It's a weird director's cut. It's not one I particularly want to see. But no. That one would be quite a big one, I think. Because like I say, you'd get Poe would leave Jakku, go back to the resistance base on the planet that's names escapes me. I can't remember.
Dantooine.
No, the one in Force Awakens. I don't know. That's Maz Kanata's castle.
Bosnian Prime.
No, that's blown up by the Starkiller base.
Crate?
No, that's Episode 8.
It's obviously had a massive impact on us, hasn't it?
Totally, yeah.
Ridgepal?
No, that's Episode 3.
Bothell Wooey?
Nah.
Shadar?
I can't think. I'm just going to have to look it up. This is not going to work otherwise.
Alderaan?
No. Of course I want to Google it online.
Pilo?
Dakar. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the base on so he goes back to Dakar. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, BB-8 probably meets up with Rey.
Yeah.
He goes back to Jakku.
Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't go off planet. Maybe she does.
No, she would. I reckon she'd go with Poe because she's interested in resistance, isn't she?
Maybe, yeah. I'm just wondering, would she have been able to... The question is for me is more, was she able to get off the planet before that point?
Would she?
Yes, is it. You know, I don't know. Because obviously
She doesn't want to leave.
No, that's true. Would she, even if she wanted to?
She's waiting.
And it's Finn's whole, he's with the resistance thing that sort of sways her, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, she's constantly trying to get back to Jakku.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe Poe just comes back. With
picks
the
up his droid and leaves.
Yeah, picks up his droid, leaves. Rey stays.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite significant, but, you know. What other ones are there? And obviously, there are things that are too well scripted and too well planned in advance to be just, what if it's not a trap? Things like that aren't going to work because it's a trap because he's been laying it for some time. Old Palestine.
What if Maul had killed Obi-Wan, not Qui-Gon?
Okay. I don't know how that's different. I mean, I suppose maybe just the inexperience.
Been Anakin's master.
He would have been, yeah, but would it have been sort of his experience?
Would it have made a difference in the grand scheme of things?
I don't know. I mean, I got the sense there was some definite chemistry between him and Shmi anyway. So would he have been like, right, we're going back to Tatooine anyway because I'd quite like to pop in see her. And
you
see
know what
her.
I mean.
So I think, you know, maybe there's something to that. Who knows?
Yeah, sure.
It's hard to say, really, but I can't think. There's certainly nothing in Jedi that springs to mind.
What if Sebulba won the pod race?
I still feel like they would have taken Anakin. Although he wouldn't have been freed, would he?
How would they fix the ship? That's the main problem, isn't it?
Yeah, true. He did wager everything on it, didn't he?
Needs spare parts for the Nubian, didn't they?
Yeah, there would have been a message through to the Jedi Council saying, can you send a car?
Yeah, but I'm in hiding with the Queen.
Yeah.
The whole point, then, they're not breaking radio silence.
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. I don't know how they would have reconciled that. Yeah, I don't know how they'd have reconciled that.
No.
If ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. What about if Dex had never heard of Kamino? He just turns up and goes, hello, Dex. What do you think of this? Yeah. He's like, no idea, mate.
What if Darth Vader had genuinely accepted Captain Nida's apology?
I think it would bode well for Admiral, not so well for Admiral Piet in terms of career progression.
Mm.
But, you know, certainly got the sense he's being kept in place by not being completely feckless.
Yeah.
Which is more than can be said for some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks what to be awesome.
What if Krennic had remained in charge of the Death Star?
Well, that's another question, isn't it? You know, would he have been on? Would he have been on Scarif in the first place? As a result, thus, you know, Tarkin can't just open fire on him. And I love that bit. That whole thing is just great.
I mean, all love and well for Peter Cushing, and love Tarkin as a character anyway. But I think one of the best things Rogue One did was make Tarkin a better character.
Yeah, I agree. I think it fleshed him out quite significantly.
Yeah.
Made him you know, it showed he had kind of slimy political elements to him. He's got ambition, you know, ambition to the point of being willing to kind of to basically glass a planet. Just to, for the sake of his own sort of his own ambition and to remove his competition. Yeah. He's ruthless. You gotta love it.
Yeah, people kind of highlight the technical achievements of having Tarkin in Rogue One, and those are amazing.
Totally.
They are really worthy of admiration.
Yeah.
But I do worry they sometimes overshadow the other part of having Tarkin involved, which is how it contributes to the story as a whole.
Yeah, very true. I think it's, let's say, that's a, I love that film. Just every time I think about it, I love it a bit more.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering if it is, it's my favourite one now.
It might be. You know, I can say for sure it's definitely in the top half, and it's possibly in the top kind of three.
Three, yeah, definitely.
At least. It's just so good. Yeah.
I'm not sure where I'd put Solo at the moment, but certainly top half.
I think Solo would go top half.
Yeah.
Or if it's not in the top half, it's kind of in that swing bit in the middle where they can, they're very kind of, yeah, there's not much between them.
Yeah.
We have to revisit that order, I think, at some point. Maybe that's an episode in itself. Who knows? But in any case, it needs to be like, I need to go back and have a look at it with, because I don't think I've revisited it since Last Jedi. Maybe even not since Rogue One.
It's been too long since me and you have just watched the movies, to be honest.
It's true. It's true. It's been a while since I've seen the movies myself, you know, just kind of just Solo.
Yeah.
I've seen them at the cinema, but I saw Solo at the cinema. But I've only seen Last Jedi, I think, three times, maybe?
I haven't seen it since it left the cinema.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I saw it twice at the cinema. I remember that.
Because I saw, weird, cause I watched Force Awakens loads. I watched, not gone back to
Force Awakens today. Four times at the cinema.
I saw it twice at the cinema, and I watched it. So it's my wife's favourite one, so it gets watched quite a lot at home.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen Last Jedi since the cinema run yet, and I really should give it another go.
I feel like maybe I've done it once since the cinema run, but I can't think when it would have been, so maybe I haven't. It's hard to say, really. But I've done Rogue One at least once since it came out of the cinemas. I saw that three times at the cinema. I was worried that it was going to be a kind of downward cascade, and I would look like, you know, I was losing kind of interest because it would be four, down three, then two, then one. But I did see Solo twice. So
that's right.
Held twice. My original plan was to beat my dad's tally for episode four, the original run in 77, which I didn't manage because I would have had to double what I did for Force Awakens to beat his tally. But there you go. You know, what if I'd done that? There's a what if moment for you. What would that have actually achieved? Not much, I'd wager.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, line the pockets of one particular cinema a bit more.
Yeah.
A few more good takings days.
Yeah, I don't really have a sliding doors moments. I think we've kind of
there's
a few for you there.
Yeah, I'll have a think on it. If I do think of any more, then obviously we can always bring it back up next week and come up with some others. But yeah, thanks for that, Dave. That's a really great question. Right, next question is from Adam K.
Yay!
So, did you want to read this one?
Sure, from Adam K. This question is not exclusive to Star Wars, but resonates heavily with it. Okay. Welcome to Talk Heavily With It.
Right.
I was wondering how you guys feel about one person writing and directing a movie. I think there are pros and cons to it, which may lend heavily to a movie's success or failure overall. There are multiple examples in Star Wars that spell this out. Consider the prequels. The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. That was a comma. Sorry, my eyes are terrible. Consider the prequels, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I fully understand how one feels about these movies are completely subjective. Writing and directing limits the type of people that can speak out against for bad ideas and also breeds more yes men. I do see the good in that there is one singular pure vision of a final product, but I can't ignore that this approach limits the story where a writer that has a significant pedigree can take a story to new heights. I thought this might be a good discussion for you both and see where you stand on these direct decisions at Disney. In the same breath, what director would you love to see get involved with Star Wars? Thanks to all you do in keeping this podcast so enjoyable. Best, Adam K.
Well, Adam, you are very, very welcome. So the first question is, what do we think of the single writer-director approach to films, to Star Wars movies, I guess, but at the same time, for cinema in general, I suppose?
I think he's pretty much hit the nail on the head in that there are strengths and weaknesses to both approaches. There are some very talented people who can write and can direct and do a very good job of it. But it's sometimes, usually when you see written, produced and directed by the same person, if they're not already someone who's kind of a household name or has already established their credentials, the immediate response is, oh, they're hard to work with.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. Like, it's one of those things you more kind of commonly see in indie filmmaking, because obviously you don't have the resources of a big studio behind you. You can't get a writer to come on board. You need to do it yourself. And they tend to be passion projects as well.
Budgetary reasons as well, yeah.
Yeah,
but, which obviously indie films are budgetary concerns.
Sure.
I mean, this Edward D. Wood Jr. would have been starring in writing, producing and directing all his films. He's generally considered one of the worst directors of all time.
This is true.
As an aside, have you ever seen the film Edward?
I have not. No, this is the Johnny Depp film, right?
Yeah, Tim Burton's biopic.
Tim Burton's
Edward
one,
D. Wood Jr. Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp plays Edward D. Wood Jr. If you ever get the chance, do watch it, because it's probably my favourite Tim Burton film. It's absolutely superb.
I can't think what my favourite would be, Tim Burton wise. I guess the first Batman. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Batman Returns fan. I like the first one. Even with the added Walken, it's still, still not very good. I don't think.
Yeah, I think the first one is stronger, actually.
First one's way stronger. I think Jack is, you know, for so long was the iconic Joker that it's hard to.
Oh, he's superb.
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. No, I really like his Joker, actually.
Yeah. He's sort of got that right kind of tone of, I mean, let's be fair, with the soundtrack by Prince, camp is a word that will be associated with that movie. And he's got the right kind of level of campy for that movie in terms of performance.
Yeah, there's an internet comedian, I think he edited Cracked for a while, called Jay Pinkerton.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it's a hell of a statement when the second Batman movie features Danny DeVito marching an army of penguins through a frozen Gotham City, sitting in a giant rubber duck and munching down raw tuna, and you're able, hand on heart, to say, yeah, the third movie is where it got campy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's peculiar.
Yeah. We're getting a bit off. You guys who can write, produce, and direct, if I think it's one of those, if you can do it, great. Then, and say, sometimes it's budgetary reasons. I think if there aren't budgetary concerns, then the studio will have to have faith in you to let you do both.
Totally.
There's always going to be guys who are better directors than writers, and guys who are better writers than they are directors.
Sure.
And filmmaking is a very collaborative art form. Everyone
that's the thing,
involved
isn't
in
it?
The film does their bit. Yeah,
it does feel like that whole kind of one singular person behind all these important roles removes some of that collaboration from the process.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like Adam touches on it, maybe you reduce the number of people who feel kind of comfortable expressing contradictory opinions about the direction of the movie, because you've got one person who's so invested in it from an emotional, professional, everything point of view, that it might be quite hard to approach that person and say, look, you know, this doesn't, I don't think this really works.
Yeah.
And it might make it tricky, whether that's direct, you know, whether that's directorially or in the writing sense, it could be either, you know, or it could be both. I think that's one of the things that people kind of suggest might have sort of tainted the prequels a little bit, is the kind of the complete ownership of everything and the perhaps lack of oversight.
I don't know if it was the writer director status which had that effect so much as it is he had too many yes men around him and not enough people. I mean, it sounds sometimes going on the documentaries and books you read, and obviously what you pick up just from being a Star Wars fan, it sometimes felt like Rick McCallum was the only one giving him any kind of devil's advocate thinking on those movies.
Yeah.
He talked him out of putting Han Solo at the Battle of Kashyyyk, which was a good decision, I think.
Yeah, that is a good that's a good shout. Because we wouldn't have got Alden then. We would have had somebody else play the role.
Yeah.
And who would have been popular then? Probably also, Shia LaBeouf.
It just made no sense for him to be there, surely.
Yeah.
I think it was for too many yes men and too much money. It was the beginning of the problems with the prequels.
Yeah, I think that's it. But I think the yes men thing, I think you're absolutely right. But I think that feeds into, I think that's a kind of a symptom of, you know, a result of the kind of the one cohesive is the wrong word. Because what I actually mean is kind of that, you know, almost unwieldy control being wielded by one person.
Yeah. I think Star Wars really gives us both sides of what I mentioned, though, because we had George Lucas wrote and directed Star Wars most likely for budgetary reasons.
Sure.
So it wasn't they have money for the special effects and realistically, I imagine Alec Guinness set up a fair amount of a paycheck as well.
Oh yes.
And so therefore they see a guy do it for budgetary reasons and the studio then go, the movie goes, you know, realistically the biggest pop culture phenomenon ever.
Certainly in our lifetime.
I don't know if there's ever been anything like it.
No. Maybe never again.
We're still talking about it now.
Yeah, totally.
And
we have a podcast all about it right now.
We do. We should plug that. Oh no, wait, we're doing it.
Yeah, we're in the middle of it right now.
Yeah. That's how much it permeates our lives. It's after so when it starts and when it stops. So then he gets a reputation. Oh, he's the guy who did Star Wars. He can do right and direct because he's proven he's made the biggest movie of all time.
Yeah.
And some that, yeah, I'll let him do what he wants. And so you see the studio then sees old guys can do it.
Yeah.
And they let him do it.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes they shouldn't.
Maybe. Yeah. It's one of those. Here's a thought that I was coming to about this, actually. Do you think that the kind of the big one size fits all, one person in charge of all these things approach works with a franchise, with a saga, with a story that it's been, particularly in this case, not the same person is not following through all the way through? Because for me, that might be part of the reason that it's not landing as much for people. The sort of the sequel, the Disney era, that may be one of the reasons the standalones are landing more is because they're not expected to be cohesive.
Maybe.
And because they're not, you know, they're not being written and directed by one person. They're being kind of, they're a mix.
Yeah. Again, it's another one, much like the whole writer director, should you let people write and direct thing. I don't know that there's a right or a wrong approach to take with it, because you take something like Middle Earth was entirely Tolkien. No one else was ever involved in the Middle Earth stuff. There's never been a Tolkien, apart from the movie adaptations, there's never been another author has picked up the typewriter and started writing more Middle Earth stories. Like there's been Dune, Kevin J. Anderson and Frank Herbert's son Brian kind of took his notes and continued the story. They've, apart from Christopher Tolkien, kind of cobbling together
Silmarillion.
Some notes. Oh, no, Silmarillion and
The Lost Stories or Lost Tales or whatever.
Lost Tales and Silmarillion have been kind of collaboratively put together from Tolkien's original notes. But there are gaps in those, and Tolkien just says, here this ends.
Yeah.
And here's the next bit we found. Whereas the Dune sequels and prequels, they kind of took his notes and went off and just made new stories with his concept. But moving away from Dune, the Tolkien stuff is, it's all Tolkien.
Yeah.
But then if you consider something like the Marvel Universe, although Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko and Larry Lieber would have been the guys, you'd Al Ewing, you'd say would be the guys kind of kicks butt all off.
Mm-hmm.
What's actually made the Marvel Universe impressive is bringing in multiple collaborators over time.
Yeah, yeah. But you have that kind of, even if you have the writing teams, you know, I'm not sure, actually, now I think about it, I'm not sure whether the Russos wrote and directed Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they did. But at the same time, they are working from reference material.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a, you know, and they also have a kind of a corporate structure. Oh, no, it isn't them. They've a screenplay done by different people. So it's not, so they direct it, but they don't write it.
Yeah.
And it, so of the two approaches, I sort of feel like my preference is the, you know, the writing and the directing being distinct. And, yeah, you know, you okay. can have the director involved in the writing, but mm-hmm. I think that the stronger, you know, there's a certain amount of, there's a certain level of collaboration yeah. that is productive on a higher yeah. level. There is a point after which too much collaboration is not productive because mm-hmm. everybody's just arguing the toss all the time and yeah. nothing's getting done.
What I was saying about the two approaches, we take the Tolkien approach or the Marvel Comics mm-hmm. approach. You can either have a totally collaborative
yeah.
creative process or a single-minded one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the original trilogy, apart from the extra directors, was pretty much completely conceived by Lucas.
Yep.
This whole story was outlined by Lucas, and the same with the prequel trilogy. And so I can understand some people kind of felt the sequel trilogy should have been Lucas's work as well, and if not, Lucas should have been one person overseeing
mm-hmm.
the entire trilogy. Would we then have wanted the same person to have overseen Rogue One and Solo and the Boba Fett movie people are convinced exists? Would we?
Possibly. Or, I don't know. I mean, maybe if the expectations were managed that these were standalone stories not connected to the saga and they just told
yeah.
isolated one-shot stories, mm-hmm. then you might be able to kind of manage that a bit. You know, expectation might be managed.
For my money, I'd have liked to see one person or maybe a small group
mm-hmm.
completely oversee episode 7 to 9 through completion and work.
I totally agree.
Not start filming episode 7 until you have solid outlines for 8 and 9 as mm. well. And then let other people come in and do the supporting stories.
Yeah, supporting stories and have the directors come in and direct the
yeah.
story. They can still write it, but they have to write yeah. within an outline.
Yeah, I think I said to you before, it's nuts to me. We have this story group who are making sure the Marvel comics and the young adult books and the coloring yeah. books all fit in with the established. Like I said today, I bought my daughter a activity book,
yeah.
a Lego Star Wars one. And there was a trivia question in there about Darth Bane. In there.
Yeah.
So the story group is making sure all this kind of stuff syncs up, but then they're wigging episodes 8 and 9.
Does seem odd.
It's
peculiar.
It's banter poo to me.
I would love to be a fly on the wall and see how they operate on a day-to-day basis and just kind of see how far their reach extends, because I feel like it should be further.
Yeah, totally, I agree.
Yeah, I think they should be the whole point of their existence is to tie this stuff together. It's
yeah,
this big
it's
interconnected
just, it's
universe.
It's mental to me that the biggest gamble in cinematic history probably since episode 1 was episode 7.
Yeah.
Because of the legacy it had to live up to. And if you're not a prequel fan, because of the disappointments it had to overcome.
Yeah.
Why did they not know how 9 was going to end before they started shooting 7?
It's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah.
And I wish I did.
As a complete aside,
okay.
totally unrelated, because it's just something that occurred to me every week. Do you remember the first photo we saw of the whole cast assembled doing the first script read through?
Yes.
Of Force Awakens? It was this big black and white photo, and
yep.
all the cast was there.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Fisher was there, Andy Serkis was there. Every single actor was there in this wonderful photo. And this is, and Daisy Ridley's kind of leaning over and chatting to Carrie Fisher,
mm-hmm.
and Hans, I think he's sitting next to Oscar Isaac,
yep.
and it's just this lovely kind of wow moment of these guys are finally agreed for a script. Now, has it occurred to you before how ticked off Mark Hamill was to be there?
Yes, in fact, he did a celebration panel a year or two ago, and they were asking him about that photo. And he said, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I read that script and I was looking, flicking through, looking through and looking through. And then I saw the scene where Kylo Ren's in the forest and, you know, he takes out Finn and then the lightsaber comes, you know, jumps and he says, oh, this is it. This is where I come in. And then, nope, not him. And then he keeps looking, oh, okay, it's the end of the fight. I'll jump in then. I always thought he was the ship that touched down in the trailer when Rey's kind of leant over what turns out to be Finn. Yeah. And you see a sort of a blinding light kind of appear in front of her. I thought it might be like a Gandalf the White style thing, yeah, or gotcha. It might be his ship kind of coming in and he would make his entrance then. But that's not what happened. But yeah, he was talking about how it was like, you know, he's very funny, obviously, when he tells these stories. He's very, very affable.
I can listen to him all day long, just talk Star Wars. Yeah. Let's see if you can get him on the show.
We've tried.
Redouble your efforts.
We've tried, but we were told in no uncertain terms. It was not.
Please
to
stop
be.
Bothering him.
No, he was very nice about it. So I've seen the messages, but
need a wheelbarrow of money. Gotcha.
But yes, it's not happening, sadly. So you know, pay it no mind. Which director would you love to see get involved in Star Wars? And as obviously, easy. As an inevitable follow up question, what would you like to see them do?
Easy, the director whose style most closely resembles Star Wars should have been installed in Star Wars a long time ago and still never has is Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I can see style him doing a good
so perfect for Star Wars.
He would be a good shout. I think he's one of those people you'd have sort of half expected when George was kind of talking about moving it on, he would be the kind of person you think he might just pass it on.
Did he get offered Jedi? I've got a feeling he got offered Jedi.
I think he did.
David Lynch got offered Jedi.
Really? That's a very, so
all
very
you guys
hard
who
sell.
Think Last Jedi is a bit weird.
There are no dancing little people in.
Imagine David Lynch. You've seen Dune, right? Imagine David Lynch's Jabba the Hutt.
There you go. That's a peculiar mental image.
It would have been Dennis Hopper, and you know it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Just in enormous prosthetic.
Now I've said that, I'd have been down for that.
Yeah, I'd have given it a go.
Yeah. Carl McLaughlin, Salacious Crumb.
Steven Spielberg. Okay, so assuming that Steven Spielberg. Let's work on the assumption that he's had the chance and turned it down. Who else might you be inclined to see? Somebody who's maybe never had a crack of the whip before.
Yeah, okay. Who would I like to see do that? I mean, there's a lot of great directors I really like, but I'm not sure they're the right fit for Star Wars.
So I had a thought on this. Talked about it a while back. There were two I'd like to see. If they ever explored a darker sort of 1313 underworld Coruscant style environment, David Fincher.
Yes, for an underground, for like a crime.
Yeah, for like a crime one, or just a kind of, you know, just a dark story, dark subject matter, you know.
Yeah, I can really see that working. Landis might work, actually.
Because
he's done action, he's done horror, he's done comedy. I genuinely think Landis he's got such a good track record.
It's true. Yeah, he's got a very good catalogue.
I mean, if you put Blues Brothers 2000 aside, he's pretty flawless.
And most people do, I think.
Yeah,
I think
everyone have forgotten about it, so I mentioned it just then. Sorry.
There you go. Failing that, Clone Wars movie with Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of hers until Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker's a brilliant movie. Yeah, I'm not that big a fan of that. I'm not normally a fan of that genre. I thought that was superb.
Her kind of blockbuster video, I might as well watch that stuff like Blue Steel and Point Break. I thought she was just airport novel dross, which is what I write now. And Hurt Locker was amazing. Did she do 0 Dark 30 as well?
Maybe? I don't know.
I've got a feeling she did. If she didn't, then I agree. Her doing almost like a Rogue One type movie.
Yeah, like a standalone with just Clone Wars related.
Let her do Han Solo in the Stormtrooper outfit.
Okay.
Do her doing a Battle of Mimban.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, yeah, so they're sort of...
I didn't mean when he's running around the Death Star.
I was going to say, that's pretty short. it's a couple of live trips. We saw most of it.
That's more Nick Park, what you're looking
for. Yeah, she is 0 Dark 30, yeah.
Okay, cool.
She's
glad I'm right.
She's done some other stuff.
As you say,
those are the two high-profile ones.
Yeah, it's Hurt Locker kind of got me, but I think because I kind of didn't like her earlier stuff, I wonder if I've missed out on some stuff and should go and revisit kind of the middle ground stuff. Yeah.
Does look like she might have done some other bits as well. But let's say that would be my one. Oh, she did Detroit, of course, the John Boyega police movie from last year.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I've not seen that yet, but I remember it being around.
I've heard it's quite good.
Oh, do you know who'd be really good at a Jedi Sith movie, possibly even an Old Republic type one?
Go on.
Chris Nolan.
Oh, yes. I would watch that.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, Christian Bale would have to be in it, but that's all right.
I'm all right with that. Yeah. Him playing Darth Malgus, I'd be up for
or
that.
Tom Hardy, you know.
Him and Tom Hardy playing Revenant Malak.
Tom Hardy is Darth Malgus.
Yeah, I go with that.
So, if you're listening, Tom.
Revenant Malak, Hardy and Bale.
Yeah.
Maybe Bale as Revan, I guess, and then Hardy as Malak, because he likes doing voices.
Chris, if you're listening,
yeah, seriously,
we'll put
please,
in a good word for
yeah,
you.
Please, yeah, please send your CV in. That would be awesome.
And Tom Hardy, if you're listening, my daughter loves you on CBeebies Bedtime Stories, so please do more of those.
Fair enough. Tom Hardy, yeah. if you're listening, please record yourself reading The Tiger Who Came to Tea as Bane.
On CBeebies Bedtime Stories.
CBeebies Bedtime Stories, because I keep saying I'm going to do it and I never have a chance.
Yeah.
So, I realize you're a very busy man as well, but I imagine you probably have access to better recording facilities on a whim than I do.
Yeah. Any of you guys have got kids and his stuff comes on iPlayer, do watch it because he's just really good at it.
Yes, I've heard nothing but good things.
Same for Chris Evans, actually, the American one, not what you're doing.
Yeah. Speaking of Chris Evans, actually, because obviously he's Captain America, the Russo brothers.
Yes.
Doing a Star Wars movie would be cool.
So have I seen any of their stuff apart from Civil War?
Probably not. No, I don't know. They did. Let's say they're most famous for Winter Soldier Winter Soldier and Civil War. But they also did.
I've googled Civil War and it's just brought up some battle from 1861.
That's not going to turn out well for you. Infinity War. You see Infinity War, right? That's them.
I haven't seen Infinity War yet.
Oh, you haven't seen Infinity War. That's them. No.
Okay. Russo Brothers.
Yeah.
Was it any of our earlier stuff? I wonder. I have not.
Some Community stuff.
I've seen Community. I've seen good episodes of Community. Yeah.
Maybe they directed some of the good ones. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. No, I can see that being a good. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
14 episodes. Yeah, they did quite a few.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
I can't read on the air.
Really?
Yeah. There's some titles I can't read. I'd have to get a bleep sound effect, and I can't be bothered.
Star Wars app and use a soundboard.
I suppose I could do that, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I haven't done a lot, but there's a lot of TV stuff before.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Winter Soldier, have a look at it. Okay, yeah. Intriguing.
But they've got a high pedigree this year because they've directed one of the highest gross movie of the year so far by some margin.
Yeah, the Star Wars contract can't be too far away, guys.
Who knows? You know, these things are always in motion behind the scenes, so it's hard to say for sure. But I would be up for that. Like I say, Catherine Bigelow would be probably my top pick out of those. Fincher would be up there, but only if he got to direct the right tone. Whereas Catherine Bigelow, I would be happy to get something war-y. You know, something more Rogue One-y than anything else.
And we want Old Republic for Chris Nolan.
That works for me, yeah. I'd be very much game for that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Adam, thank you for sending those questions in.
Yeah, it was a good one.
So that's our listener bit. So we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, there are a few news bits to pour over. So we will come back to you. For you, it'll only be a few seconds. And we're back.
In many ways, we never left.
We're very much so, you know. Yeah. We're both in the same places.
Literally, starters.
We're both in the same places we were. Not much time has passed since we last spoke to to you, the fine listeners of Talk Star Wars. So now it's time for a few bits of news.
Yay.
Still a few bits of speculation. Yeah, still a few bits of light speculation, but there is a little more concrete stuff this week. So the Hollywood Reporter is reporting that Lando is definitely, apparently, totally back this time for sure, 100%. Still no word from StarWars.com or Lucasfilm. Which is weird.
Yeah. Why are they staying
quiet?
It's
weird. The silence on it is very weird because the Kerry Russell stuff isn't confirmed either. That's another rumor that's doing the rounds. That's, you know, that. But then that might be because
I always keep meaning to, like in the run up to Force Awakens, how many of the casting rumors turned out to be true?
I've never had a look, but
maybe we should go back and see if Florence Welch got cast in the end.
Mate, I don't think she did. No, I think she ended up just being a musician, in the same way as she was before. and since. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of the stuff obviously bore fruit because people got put in the film and then they were there. But yeah, there's always, I mean, there's always stuff like that going on. But, you know, this one, let's say the Hollywood Reporter is reporting it as kind of gospel. It's still very quiet on the Lucasfilm front.
Okay. But
that doesn't necessarily mean nothing's going on. It just means they're not talking about it. In mm-hmm. a similar way, there's a thing. This isn't in the show notes because this was out of absolutely nothing. There was a piece on Nerdist this week about how the Kenobi movie is still running along behind the scenes, but it's a rumor of a rumor. It's not.
Okay.
There's nothing. Still nothing concrete about that. It's very peculiar. Similarly, the word is that the Solo movie will be dropping on home release in September this year.
Okay.
Sort of late September. So that would be a physical release. I didn't see if there was anything that distinguished it from digital, because sometimes digital gets a slight edge, like a few weeks.
One way or t'other, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's, I think with Last Jedi, it was 2 or 3 weeks run lead time on the digital release versus the physical one. I think the physical one dropped in April and the digital one was March, late March.
Okay.
Somebody can feel free to obviously write in and correct me if I've got that wrong, but I'm fairly sure it was late March for the digital, mid-April or so for the physical release. So this would kind of, in terms of distance from release date, of cinematic release date, this would kind of fit relatively in line with this. So I'm mm-hmm. inclined to believe it's, even if it's not confirmed, I'm inclined to believe it's probably in that ballpark.
Yeah, okay.
I would say that's fairly reasonable. Is that going to be one you're going to pick up?
Solo?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so, I don't know if it'd be a day one purchase, because I very rarely day one purchase.
Yeah, it's not a common. It's not common for me to do day one purchase. Last one, I think I did do Rogue One on day one, but that's because I absolutely adored that film and still do. Last Jedi, I didn't do on day one. I got it for Christmas, or my birthday. Must have been my birthday because it came out in April, so that wouldn't have made sense otherwise.
Okay.
So yeah, I got it for my birthday, so I was holding off until then. I didn't buy the digital for Last Jedi, actually. I keep meaning to, but it just keeps slipping my mind whenever I'm on iTunes or digital provider of choice here.
Yeah.
Solo is probably one I will get digital and physical, because oftentimes that's quite common for me. I think I've got most things in digital and physical now, including including Clone Wars, which is nice.
Any particular reason?
It's quite nice to have it on my iPod Touch for the train.
Okay.
Whereas, obviously, with the physical media, you can make it work with portable players and stuff, but it just means carrying around more stuff. Whereas with the iPod Touch, it's nice and small, it's nice and convenient. So I've just kind of stuck with doing that as a thing. And I still have this certain attachment to physical media when it's Star Wars. I think it's limited to that pretty much. But with Star Wars, I do like having the physical thing as well. So it's a mix of convenience and this kind of, like I said, there's a preference there with physical media when it comes to Star Wars and certain video games, which, you know, and when it's Star Wars video games,
no stopping you.
That's before day one, I purchased that somehow. But it's definitely one I'm going to pick up. I probably won't bother with 4K, even though it will be released on 4K. Because I have a 4K capable TV, allegedly.
Right.
I'm not convinced it does 1080 particularly well, so I'm not convinced it's going to do a particularly good job with 4K picture. Plus, I don't have a source at present, because PS4 is the old style PS4, so it doesn't do 4K. My Xbox One is also an old Xbox One, so it's not a 4K capable Blu-ray player. I think the Xbox One S is 4K. Blu-ray compatible. Or that might be the Xbox One X, which I'm thinking of. I'm not sure. I've kind of lost track, to be honest. I've very much taken the position with consoles of, I will buy it if mine breaks, I will replace it with the nicest one I can get of the current ones available. So when my Xbox One does eventually break, because I have had it quite a long time, when it does eventually break, I will replace it with an Xbox One X, because that will be the nicest one you can get, unless something else has come along to supersede it. Same with the PS4, I'll get a Pro. If mine breaks, I'll get a Pro to replace it. But until then, I'm going to stick with what I've got. Stick with what I've got currently. You know, currently what I've got works perfectly well, and it's a perfectly good games machine. I don't have any problems that I often find myself not having problems other people describe with games and performance. I just don't see it, or maybe it's, I mean, obviously in my line of work, maybe it's a busman's holiday. So I've just find myself going, yeah. I'm not going to see, I don't care if it's there. I'm not going
to
see it.
People seem to get really fed up with games, or people seem to grumble about things in the video game, which never even occurs to me. Mm. And I've come to the conclusion I must just be quite dense.
That's the spirit.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can possibly interpret that, I guess.
Yeah. I finished the Battlefront 2 story mode this week. And the way people were complaining about it, you think it was awful. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was Star Wars shooty stuff. I got to fly some starfighters. I got to shoot some stuff. I got to play as some major characters from the saga as well.
This is true.
And I just really enjoyed it. I didn't understand what, because especially it was like, it's mostly an online game. It was basically a bolt-on extra.
Yeah, I mean, historically, single player has always been the introduction to multiplayer, and it's only in recent years that it's flipped and gone, no, you're just going to have to play multiplayer, but Battlefront 2 threw in a campaign in addition to.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really have any kind of grand impact on the universe, but it's fine.
I really liked Inferno Squad. I thought they were good characters.
Yeah.
But
I enjoyed them.
If it was DLC that added a third part to a campaign, I'd buy into that, you know.
Yeah.
But as established, I'm dense.
Apparently, well, like I say,
it's the only explanation I have anymore.
Based on the criteria you've given, that is the conclusion you've come to. Yeah. I will say we don't have to see eye to eye on that, but you know, that's absolutely fine. speaking of video games, were you aware that Palpatine had gone missing from Battlefront 2?
I was not, but I'm not good enough to get to be with characters very often, so I probably wouldn't have noticed.
So he's actually been pulled from Battlefront 2 because he's massively OP.
really?
Apparently he's incredibly overpowered. There was a video that did the rounds of him just walking around the battlefield, force lightning everybody, just obliterating them, not taking a shred of damage. You know, he's kind of... He's taking damage, but he's quite hardy.
Yeah.
The lightning is incredibly powerful. You can understand it. In terms of, you can understand why he's powerful, but at the same time, you can understand why people are upset that he breaks the balance.
I have more problem with him being a frontline troop than anything.
It's peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're going to touch on something in the next bit of news that I think is also kind of weird in a similar vein.
The hero also, stuff. Apparently, that Ewok mode was like a temporary thing. I can't play it at the moment.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. Sorry to build your hopes up.
I hope it comes back.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I'm just playing Friday the 13th and shouting yup yup into the comm every now and again.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It's best I can do.
Every time you get the little end of level summary screen, you can just play the Ewok theme from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Whichever one you want. We can do either the original one or the new one. They're both perfectly cromulent songs.
Simultaneously.
Yeah. You know, you can play both. Maybe
I used to really love the original, and as time's gone on, the new one's grown on me quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say I quite like both, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly not one of these. Yeah.
That I've disliked the old one now.
No. I've never felt strongly enough about it that it should be, you know, removed and replaced. I do like the Yub Yub song, though. So Palpatine's turning up. So maybe he's been pulled from Battlefront to be brought into Star Wars Legion.
Star Wars Legion, yeah.
So
we
talked about it earlier. You're a fan of this and you're playing it.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's one of your systems. Star Wars Legion, for those unfamiliar, is the tabletop skirmish game, a bit like kind of like a Warhammer style.
I suppose it's kind of larger end of skirmish, I suppose.
It's their answer to Warhammer in terms of
it's fair, yeah,
more very, like very that sort of game so. System. Yeah.
It's of that ilk. Yes. So Palpatine and his Royal Guard has been announced as coming quarter four 2018, which if you're into tabletop gaming, you know it's quarter two 2019. And he's a bit, firstly, a major stumbler. I really, really hate that in canon they're called the Royal Guard when they should be the Imperial Guard, because it's not royalty, it's an Imperium.
Yeah.
But that's nothing anyone can control.
No.
Apart from Auntie Kath, and she seems to have more important things to worry about.
Yeah, which is fair, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a boots on the ground trooper when he's put in this game. And yeah. he's turned up in Armada, and he's turned up, obviously he's in Rebellion, and he's mm-hmm. in Armada, but in Armada he's on a large ship. He's yeah. not physically on board, he's on board a Star Destroyer, which, yeah. no, that, thematically that works fine.
Sure, he must have been at some point.
I think he's an X-Wing, but only in a Lambda shuttle.
Isn't it the Imperial Raider that had him as the...
It might be the Raider, actually, yeah. Maybe. But again, a large...
There is a ship. Card.
He's not in a TIE fighter.
No.
It was a thematic...
yeah. Sorry. Just the mental image of that has just popped up yeah. in my head. Just...
His cloak flapping around in zero-G.
Yeah.
yeah. Oh, man. I think he's an Imperial Assault, but again, Imperial Assault is like a story-driven RPG. Yes, so as an end-of-level boss, he kind of works.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, Legion being more of a boots on the ground skirmish, lots of lasers and lots of explosions and AT-ST stalking around. Mm-hmm. It seems a little jarring, but I suppose tabletop gaming is very much a sandbox. If you and your friends can come up with a reason why Palpatine's there, then go have fun and do that story.
That's
a large part
it's
of it.
It's just about choice, I guess.
If in your head you can rationalise, oh, he's there because this reason for part of a campaign you're doing or whatever, mm-hmm. great, go have fun with him, absolutely. But he's a character I was expecting them to do at some point. I'm surprised they've done him so soon.
Yeah.
Because I think that's
the question I had.
That'll make him the third commander for Legion after Darth Vader's in the Corset and General Veers was the first expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Rebellion had Luke was in the core. They've done Leia and they've announced they're going to do Han.
Yes.
As commanders.
Yeah. Which it does seem weird because this was one of the things I thought of as well was. It you know in X-Wing he was not in the first few waves of ships. Maybe the Raider, maybe the shuttle, mm-hmm. where he turned up in any meaningful way. Armada he wasn't in at the beginning.
No.
Imperial Assault he was I think maybe wave three or four.
It's a third or fourth box expansion. It's a couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. With Rebellion, he was in the Corset, but with the nature of Rebellion being the Galactic Civil War, that makes sense because he's also doing missions to planets, which makes sense.
Yeah, it's not Rebellion isn't purely combative. You are doing political missions as well. It makes perfect sense.
He makes sense there. Whereas with this, not only is he a boots on the ground trooper in a, you know, he's the sort of the big daddy of the Empire as a boots on the ground trooper, but he's also so early on in the life cycle.
Yeah.
Seems very odd.
He could kind of work. I mean, so there are ways you could make him work in your story-driven games. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be something as simple as the Emperor is there on a political mission and the Rebellion is trying to take him out.
Yeah, that works.
That's a game. That's great.
Totally.
But yeah, it's just an odd one so soon.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a preview of the cards he comes with or his powers or anything, but I've noticed that in the photo showing what you get in the component box, there's a lot of suppression markers. So I'm assuming Force Lightning is going to be a part of it. But it's almost like by that, this game seems to be firmly locked in post A New Hope Galactic Civil War so far.
Yeah, which is weird.
He's supposed to be hidden, isn't he? He's kind of faded away from the public eye.
But then that's true of Vader as well, isn't it? To a degree, he's kind of spotted out and about, but he's not a frontline political figure.
I kind of stand by what I said in the last episode about Vader being the worst kept secret in the Empire. It's kind of like everyone hears stories of Vader, and a few people might see him.
Yeah,
but he's not a poster boy.
No, by no means. You know, it's more like your Massamedas and people like that, I guess, who are kind of frontline.
You get the impression that. If Vader walked by some stormtroopers on a Star Destroyer, they would know who he was.
Yeah, sure.
But there would be very much a kind of Kark, that's Lord Vader.
Yeah, fair. But there's so many characters I could think of that you could release before Palpatine for Legion. Like you could have a Cassian Andor and Krennic. You could have Jyn Erso. You could have...
The only thing I can think of, I mean, X-Wing, they kind of just mix and match the eras. You can put Ray in a ship with Wedge, with
of course you can,
Snap Wexley, you know.
Yeah.
You can do it. And if it's a sandbox game, then I'm in no way saying I'm trying to tell you how to play X-Wing. Go do it. Do what you want to do. It's just not how I choose to play these sort of games.
Mm-hmm.
So far, there's been no releases which have dated it outside of post A New Hope, Galactic Civil War.
Which might explain why you don't get the Rogue One stuff, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Imperial Assault, they crept a little bit more in either direction because you ended up with a crew of ghosts in there and you could get Obi-Wan, and we ended up doing two versions of Luke, one in the Tatooine dance and one in the black suit, green lightsaber.
Yeah, in the Jedi robes.
But Imperial Assault has time rules in it for the campaign, will tell you
who you can and can't
you're
use.
Locked into.
Yeah.
And if your model is outside of that time lock, you can't use them. Fine, because especially as Imperial Assault is very much a story-driven role-playing game, really, as well.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Mm.
I've heard Krennic rumoured and I've heard Obi-Wan rumoured, but as of officially announced stuff, there's nothing that dates it outside between Episode 4 and Episode 6.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, they've got Luke in the corset for Legion, right?
Yes.
As Tatooine Luke.
Post
A New Hope, but pre Jedi.
He's in a flight suit. Most people have painted him up in kind of a Dagobah outfit.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, that sounds about right, I guess.
I gave him a blue lightsaber anyway.
So yeah, fair. Fair.
On the grounds that I knew Han was coming out, so I knew it wasn't between Empire and Jedi.
Yeah, true. Well, if you get the little carbonite one, that could be a cool little prop. But
that would be fun.
I mean, obviously, you wouldn't expect him to have character cards and stuff. It's like the old Pokemon, and they have like one that just does splash, which is basically just flail around a bit. That kind of, you know, gather dust.
Before Heraclix, there was a Lord of the Rings tradable miniatures game,
mm-hmm.
and the starter set came with Frodo with a One Ring, and it was an empty base.
Oh, wow, that's pretty clever. Now, obviously, they do the translucent plastic to keep me happy.
Ah, yes, that's true.
Keeps me sweet. So I'm glad it's not just me who saw that announcement and
I will say,
can send it over to me.
Guards
it's kind of weird.
Are nails in Imperial Assault. They are so hard. And my dad, Ian, who does Brick Fury and Firewind Ready, our Star Wars Legion YouTube series.
Which Talk Star Wars viewers will have no doubt seen on Talk Star Wars.
Ian's my dad, he does the show with me.
Yeah.
He was surprised to see the Royal Guard in Imperial Assault.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, to me, they're kind of like the Swiss Guard. Yeah, they do look a bit ridiculous, but you should be under no impression they could take you down if they needed to.
Oh, 100%. That's their job.
Or the British soldiers with bearskins you get around Buckingham Palace. They might look ridiculous, but make no mistake, they can probably kill you four different ways barehanded.
Oh, yeah. That's B-A-R-E.
With a bearskin.
Yeah.
And, if they're anywhere near as hard as they are in Imperial Assault, they're going to be an interesting force on the battlefield.
Nice. Yeah, you can sort of see. Yeah, maybe if they combine. That's the thing. If you were to the idea you kind of posited, the story campaign mission where you sort of interrupt a diplomatic political mission, makes sense if you have those two sets of characters. But then you almost feel like they should be released as a big pack.
You should. I think realistically. If they did come as one big pack, then they'd just be priced the same as buying them separately anyway.
True.
And you get people complaining that they didn't want Palpatine, they just wanted the Royal Guard.
Yeah, true. Plus, I guess if you were to make them into the same sort of size as a Stormtrooper regiment, you might lose some of the appeal of having them
Someone's going to want two squads of Royal Guard and object to the fact they've got to pay for another Palpatine. So
well, make them into Palpacino, surely. Problem solved.
If I end up with two, that's what I'm going to have to do.
Exactly, you're going to have to make a Palpatino.
Paint them up in the Starbucks colours.
Problem solved. Like I say, I'm glad it's not, when you send it over to me, I'm glad it's not just me who saw that and that was my reaction was, whoa, that seems early for him and it seems weird to have him on the battlefield in Legion.
If I get him, and I'm pretty sure I will, I'm really enjoying Legion, so I can totally see myself getting a Palpatine regardless.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands at the moment, and this is subject to change when I see the final unit, obviously, he would be a character I would throw in every now and again. He wouldn't be a regular on the tabletop for me. It would be, I thought we'd do a Palpatine scenario for a change.
Yeah, fair enough. Makes sense. So we got our first look at Star Wars Resistance.
Yes.
So Vesuvia was kind enough to send this over because I was going to put it in the show notes anyway, but thankfully she saved me a job. So I always appreciate it, Vesuvia. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, sure,
feel free to send over, and that goes for everybody, including Vesuvia, you know, including Vesuvia, especially Vesuvia. Mm-hmm. If you come up with any cool stuff you want us to talk about, then feel free to send it over to podcast@talkstarwars.co.uk or DM us on Twitter or whatever, and we will have a look at it and see if it's up our street. So there's not a lot to show, but you do get a sense of what the style is from looking at that picture. So I've included it in the show notes.
It's almost like a 2D Rebel style, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought.
How do you feel about the switch to 2D?
In terms of animation style?
Yeah.
I'm all right with it, as long as they tell, you know, if they tell good stories with it, I'm kind of on board, you know.
It's just, I just was just so in my head ready for it to be like Clone Wars and Rebels. It really, I found it really jarring.
It is. It's definitely a tonal shift.
Yeah, I mean, Force of Destiny is a great 2D show, but Force of Destiny is more kiddie, isn't it, than Rebels? Rebels is kind of pitched at junior school, which is for non-British friends is kind of ages 8 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
And Force of Destiny, I think, was initially conceived as a girls' TV show.
Certainly more female.
It generally focuses on the female characters of Star Wars, and it is a great show. I absolutely love Force of Destiny.
I should give it a go.
But I think it's also a slightly younger age range as well. It feels a bit like maybe ages 5 to 10 is Force of Destiny.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, my daughter loves it. She's not even 18 months yet, so...
Yeah. And then if it's colourful and stuff... You know, kids are cool like that. Their barrier to entry in terms of what they find impressive is much lower. So, you know.
She just loves Star Wars anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, because she's my girl.
Yeah,
so we've got this kind of, I presume this is from a presentation. It doesn't look like a convention.
No, it's a presentation. Yeah, I think it's a presentation. Yeah, I believe it's in France. I'm not 100% sure
on that.
You can
tell that just from a photo?
No, I think I've seen accompanying literature with it that suggested it was from some sort of maybe like a shareholders conference or something that went along with that. So I don't know for sure, but I believe, like I said, I believe it was from French. Oh, it came from a French source originally. So
that's close enough.
It's actually somebody who works for Disney France. So that seems perfectly
potential
reasonable.
Spoiler warning, I guess, because this is kind of leaked, I guess.
Mm.
Just, you know, we're analysing a leak here, so
yeah, we are. This is true.
Depends if you class that as a spoiler or not, because it's about your warning.
Yes.
The picture's kind of broken into two halves, one which is very clearly the First Order on one side, and one which is obviously a much brighter, yellowy, presumably the good guy. Oh, yeah, BB-8, so it's got to be the good guys.
Yes.
So analysing the picture on the left-hand side, Captain Phasma takes up most of the artwork.
I heard somebody say that that's actually the guy from the Poe Dameron comics in his armour.
Oh, okay.
I don't know for sure.
Ahead, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but somebody saw that written on Twitter or something.
That'd be cool if they do that. I love when the media intermingles.
Yeah.
Lot of TIE fighters.
Yeah. I know they have talked about putting Phasma in regardless, so she may still be in the mix and just not in that picture. And it may, but like I say, it may also still be her. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Two First Order troopers, and there's one of the red suited guys, which is that a Praetorian guard?
Could be, I guess. It doesn't quite look
right.
The
helmet doesn't look quite right, does it? No. It's almost like a Crimson Empire helmet.
Yeah, and it's a stature thing as well. It doesn't quite look kind of
big
enough.
No, you're right, actually. I was just, now I've zoomed in. Yeah, that doesn't look like a Praetorian Guard.
Yeah.
It looks like a First Order uniform, possibly with a slightly altered visor.
Mm-hmm.
But blood red.
Yeah.
Okay, possibly a new character then.
Hmm.
Over on the right-hand side, which is much brighter and day-glowy, we have a Caucasian male taking up the front of shot, who kind of looks a bit like... why have I brain farted? Ezra.
Ezra, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of an... I'm not saying it is Ezra, but it's an Ezra vibe.
Mm.
Yeah. BB-8 is there.
Yep. I see a Poe Dameron in the top left.
Poe Dameron is in the top. Definitely Poe Dameron.
Yeah, that's Poe Dameron.
Style pretty well.
It's a really nice... That bit is probably... That looks quite nice to me. But that could... I mean, looking at the right-hand picture...
Yeah.
The Poe Dameron thing does almost look kind of 3D.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think that's just the way it's shaded. But
maybe. It makes me wonder if maybe just because we've seen this as a still image doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be a 3D animation. Yeah. It might just be that we're seeing 2D kind of concept stuff.
I think what's weird is I don't think this is an original piece of artwork, because if you look at him, and there's also an African-American chap on the other side from him.
On the opposite side,
The shading doesn't sync up. I think these are separate pictures that have been kind composited. Of photoshopped together, composited for this picture.
Yeah, maybe. So you're talking about the black guy on the right-hand side of the green alien?
Yeah.
Versus the one underneath Poe?
Yes. I can't make out if it's a man or a woman, that one. No. It has slightly longer, either long hair or short dreads.
Yeah, I see what you mean. The way it's shaded, it could be facial hair, but it could also just be shading.
Yeah,
underneath. Yeah, it's hard to tell, isn't it? Because the image is not fantastically clear, but it's clear enough.
No.
And what's that kind of craft at the bottom? Can't really tell.
So the alien, I recognise that species, but I can't quite place it. I recognise that design, but I just can't place it at the moment.
Yeah, same. I'm drawing blank.
There seems to be something in between BB-8 and the African American chap.
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
I can't make out if it's got like a battle droid like snout.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Like, there's definitely something there, isn't there? Whether that's a weapon or a droid, another vehicle.
I can't quite make that out.
Yeah, no,
it's definitely something there. That vehicle is weird.
Yeah,
it's
got one
wing on the left hand side and kind of like a stumpy right wing further back as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very odd design. It may just be because of, like you say, it's a composite shot. It may just be that we can't see something about it that's kind of explained. Yeah,
there's no sense of scale to it either. I mean, my initial gut is that it looks like a single fighter, single person fighter cockpit there. Mm. It doesn't look like a cockpit from something like the Ghost or the Falcon.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something just different, isn't it? It's very odd. There's something else in there.
It looks like a single person fighter, I think.
Yeah. In the left-hand side of the image, in the First Order bit, between the two tie panels, is that just a cockpit, that sort of yellowy-orange kind of orb? Is that just the way of the angle of the two panes?
Yes, I believe that's just the cockpit of the lead TIE fighter.
Yeah, I initially thought it might be something more interesting, but I think you're right. On further inspection, I think that might be exactly it.
Yeah. There's also, if you scroll down a bit...
It's a bald bloke.
A giant bald bloke with a microphone.
With a suit, yeah.
And he's holding... something in his hand.
What does it look like? What do you think his relevance is to? Yeah.
Might be it's something to click on the projector with. I'm not sure, but I'm going to enter into the spirit of the internet and say I'm 100% sure that's Mara Jade.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, Pelly on at a push, I guess, as a second choice. You know, it's if we want to go sort of really granular on this, it's an interesting choice of projector. What does that tell you, do you think?
Yeah. Since Star Wars podcasts analyze weirder, to be honest.
Never change, internet. Never change.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways. But thanks for sending that over. So we've had a good pour over that one. Hopefully there'll be more to share. Because that's supposed to be this year, right? Resistance.
I was under the impression it was like the autumn.
So it's not far off.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, so it should be relatively close by.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah.
Before Palpatine comes out of the Legion, anyway.
Well, there you go. So the one last bit we got to talk about news-wise this week.
Autumn 2018, it starts on the Disney Channel.
There we go, so it's not far off, you know.
No.
So that's kind of, what, at the latest sort of September time? So a couple of months.
Yeah, so 2-3 months away. Yeah. So far we know nothing.
No.
I don't recognise any of the voice actors, I'm afraid.
No, I think they have got Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie confirmed?
Not on the Wikipedia article.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I thought they had been confirmed for it, but maybe their characters have and maybe there'll be other people playing them.
Sorry. Oscar Isaac and Gwendolyn Christie are credited as guest stars.
Oh, there you go. So,
as is BB-8, he's got a little credit on his own. Aww. It's adorable. Yeah. A series will debut in the United States on Disney Channel in fall 2018. Disney XD airing a series later in the United States and worldwide.
Yeah. Which for us will be even more.
Which for us will be when I'm old and grey.
2021.
Don't joke.
So, one last piece for this week. There's another new excerpt from the Thrawn Alliance's audiobook on StarWars.com, and it features Padme Amidala.
Have you read the other Thrawn book?
No, I haven't, no.
No, I wonder if I'm getting quite tempted by this new one, but I wonder if I need to read the other one first.
I don't think it matters extensively. Certainly not these bits that they're kind of teasing, the Anakin and the Padme stuff.
Yeah. It seems Timothy, if you're listening, let us know.
Yeah, it seems to be unrelated. But yeah, on the StarWars.com website, they have another excerpt from the book. Cool. A very cool bit of artwork of Natalie Portman. Very, very nice.
Totally nailed that. Really well done.
It was great, yeah. And that excerpt is available on StarWars.com. So if people are interested in the book, then, you know, and haven't already got their copy pre-ordered like me, then you can sort of give the excerpt a listen and see if it's for you. And if it is, then you can partake by pre-ordering. And if you wanted to pre-order, actually, you can use our Amazon widget, can't you?
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah. But that's, you know, I'm jumping the gun a couple of minutes. So it has come time, dear listeners, for us to...
I'll enjoy
that. Yeah. It's, you know, the news cycle is a little bit... stop start at the moment. It's drip feeding, but we are very blessed to have excellent contributions from our listeners, and two of the, I would say, the finest Star Wars minds available to discuss them, which obviously means we can keep going for a while, but like I say, there is a finite amount of news to talk about, so you know, it does leave us a little bit at the mercy of the news cycle, and we're not on the right time zone for it, because what will probably happen is we'll get some big piece of news announced tomorrow, and then we'll end up, you know, it'll be like, well, why didn't they talk about it this week? Well, we record on a Thursday in the UK.
Yeah.
So if it happens between Friday and Sunday, we won't know about it until the show's already ready to go. So, you know, it happens. So there you go. But thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars. If you've enjoyed the show and wish to subscribe, we're available on all good podcast catchers and Apple Podcasts, as we alluded to earlier. So you can find Talk Star Wars on all of those. The podcast is available to play on talkstarwars.co.uk. So you can go to any of the new blog posts about the podcast, and there's an embedded player where you can just hit play and it will play the episode for you. You can stay on Talk Star Wars. Obviously, you know, if you want to go to other bits on the website, open a new tab, do that. And from there, like I say, you can find our Amazon widget where you can pick up anything Star Warsy themed. We get a little bit of love in return. Doesn't cost you any extra. The world keeps on spinning. Brad, where can people find you on social media between shows?
You can search for Brad Harmer Barnes on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RealBradHB. And you can search my books on Amazon.
Yes, you can. And as I say, you can do that directly from talkstarwars.co.uk by clicking the link and typing in Brad Harmer Barnes and buying the books.
You
definitely should.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision. I also run the at Talk Star Wars Twitter account. So, I do.
I do. Yeah. I think I do. I feel awful if I don't.
No, you follow it. I know you do. I thought. I run it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah. So I run that. So we've also got a Facebook page, Talk Star Wars. We've got an Instagram. Not a lot going on there, but we have got one at Talk Star Wars. There's a YouTube. Again, see above. Not a lot going on there, but what's there is there on Talk Star Wars TV on YouTube. And I feel like I'm missing something. There's the website, talkstarwars.co.uk.
Okay, right,
We're available on Stitcher. You say the only one that's missing at the moment is Spotify. I still haven't heard back about whether that's happening anytime soon. There is a big backlog because word seems to have got around that Spotify is available and everybody wants a piece, understandably so.
Yeah, totally.
I was early to the party on the other podcasts. Obviously, I was not in charge of this at the time, and I've taking steps to get it done as soon as possible. In the meantime, I must wait. Obviously, we are part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. So if you wish to connect with a large group of fantastic Star Wars podcasts, including but not limited to Tumbling Saber, Generation X-Wing, yep, Nerd yep. Room, The Skyhoppers, yep. Rogue really Squadron. Like yeah, they're really good. Rogue Squadron, Tatooine Sons, Less Than 12 Parsecs, the San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast. I believe yeah, I've covered them all. I think that's everybody. Yeah. I'm always worried about this, but I think I'm
from delivery. As of last episode, I subscribed to all of those, and I'm excellent. Doing my absolute best to listen to all of them. But sorry, guys, it might take me a while to get around.
It's understandable. There are a yeah. lot of great podcasts out there.
I listened to Skyhoppers today, so that's why yes. I remembered.
Excellent. So yeah, there are 9 in the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network.
That's too many. We're going to have a cull.
we were proper ourselves on the altar.
You're a fire when ready.
Yeah. Yeah, 7.
Yeah.
Where am I missing? Oh, 8. I'm missing one.
And us.
No, I've got us. I've got ours. What am I missing? There's something missing off my feed. I'll have to fix that. I'm just looking at my podcast app on my phone, and I can see 8. So maybe there are 8. It's also possible there are 9, and I'm missing one. I know which one I'm missing. I will fix that now.
Okay. Is it the Archers?
Yes, it's the Archers, a lesser known part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, but nonetheless important. You know, no less important for being so.
I'm totally down for more Star Wars audio dramas.
Well, there you go. You know, maybe we can
maybe not sit in top field.
You had an empire, luxury.
God, like this.
There we go.
Archers,
see,
but set entirely around moisture farming.
There you go. 9, there are 9 in the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network, and I did name them all. So,
okay, cool.
There you go. If you go to starwarscommonwealth.com, take your first steps into a larger world, you can find them all there. So thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars for this week, and we will see you all again next week.
Bye. See you guys.